Next on The Balanced Word, Jacob enters into a wrestling match with God. You might be surprised to hear how it all turns out.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
You've no doubt seen a sporting event that was a total mismatch from the word go. And then something unexpected happened. Perhaps it was in the Olympics where someone from out of nowhere and unexpectedly wins the gold medal. Well, today we'll take a look at what appeared from the outset as the greatest mismatch of all. Jacob is about to enter into a wrestling match with God. And you might be surprised to discover who wins. As we open our Bibles to Genesis chapter 32 today on The Balanced Word, we'll get to know who Jacob is and why he chose to fight with God on this occasion. All of it is part of Dave Rolfe's Through the Bible and Stories series.
Last week we looked at the story of Abraham and as he had Isaac, and his life culminated in this willingness to sacrifice his only son, who he had when he was 100 years old, to give him over to the Lord. And that became the turning point of Abraham's life. It's the one act that he is known for more than any other act. Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called Tipping Point, where he talks about how everyone's life has certain particular points when everything changes, when something happens. Well, we're going to be looking at Jacob this morning. And in Genesis chapter 32, Jacob had his turning point, where the tipping point of wrestling with God, a street fight with God. But for us to talk about it, it's important for us to back up a little bit so that you can really understand who he is. I think a lot of times we can tell stories, but we don't really know the character. And character development is incredibly important in the communication of a story. So I want you to know Jacob. Maybe you think you know him, maybe not, but we're just going to quickly go through what Genesis tells us about Jacob so we can understand the guy who, at this point, got in a fight with God. Well, in order to understand Jacob, we had kind of skipped over Isaac once he was sacrificed last week. But to understand anyone, it helps if you understand their father a little bit. And his father, Isaac, first of all, he wasn't born until his parents were, you know, his dad was 100, his mom was in her 90s. So you know that he was precious to them and probably kind of coddled and protected and babied. Especially, I'm sure, after Sarah heard about Abraham almost sacrificing him, she was like, probably, he's not getting out of my sight again. And so they would have been super protective, homeschooled him, the whole thing. No, I'm just kidding. But he wasn't this guy who had this great social skill. So he got to where he was 40 years old, and he had never had a date. He was still living at home at 40 playing video games. I made that part up. But he's at home, and his dad's, Abraham's like, we should, I guess, have our son get married sometime. And this was right after Sarah had died. And so he gets his servant to go off to another country and find a wife for Isaac. I don't know how that would make you feel. Most other people in the Bible didn't get married that way, but Isaac was at home, and he was kind of he wasn't a real super masculine kind of a guy. We don't know about him doing anything heroic. He does what Abraham did one time later when he offered his wife. He says, oh, she's just my sister. Go ahead and take her. So he wasn't the most courageous guy in the world, but he had that protective, overprotective, you know, upbringing. And so it made sense. So he finally gets married at around 40. But you get the idea of what kind of game he had, that for their honeymoon night, you know where they chose to spend it, his first night with Rebecca? In his dead mother's tent. It's like, how romantic is that? Boy, this is the moment we've been waiting for. Let's go in my mother's tent where she died. So that was a little weird. So anyway, Isaac, it takes him another 20 years before he has kids. Now, finally, they get pregnant. And they're having twins, and this is where Jacob comes in. Jacob is a twin with his brother Esau. Now, in their culture, to be born first was really important. It meant you got two-thirds of the inheritance, and the other kids would divide the other one-third. So with two kids, in their case, you know, the one coming out second would only get a third of their possessions. It turns out Esau got out first. Now, he was a big baby, big old hairy, like Dan Blocker, you know, on Bonanza. He was this massive guy. And as he's being born, this big ball of hair, little Jacob is scrambling and fighting, and he's holding onto his brother's ankle, trying to like pull him back in. He was a battler, a scrapper. So it's why they named him Jacob. The word Jacob means literally heel catcher, but heel catcher was a term that they would use to refer to somebody who was always just trying to pull other people down in order to move themselves forward. If we were going to find a synonym for it, we would say that he was named Weasel. You know how weaselly people just like always work their way in? I remember one time we were posing for a picture with Billy Graham with a few pastors, and this one Calvary pastor who will remain nameless just pushed his way in right at the last second to be right next to Billy. And I think of that every time I look at that picture. And I, you know, what a weasel. Well, that's what Jacob is named right from the beginning, you know. So they're born, and he's, you know, I don't know if you've seen twins where sometimes there's twins, but one of them, like, has more talent and skill, and they're better looking and everything else. That's kind of the way he felt growing up. Esau was, you know, he had ripped abs when he was like 6 years old. He was just, let me out. And he was the man's man who was going out in the field and just killing animals and doing barbecues. And so it says that his dad loved him. It's kind of funny because he was a real rebellious kid. You know, a lot of times when somebody's the bad boy in the family, dad kind of secretly admires him. Like Esau kept marrying multiple Canaanite wives. And it says he did it because he knew his parents couldn't stand that kind of girl. You know, so he was just the guy out there. And so his dad loved him. Loved him in a way that, you know, if you go to a Pop Warner football game, you can watch the dads on the sidelines and tell which of them were actually good athletes and which of them aren't. Because the ones who were wimps are out there, kill them, because they're trying to live their life through their son. The ones who actually had accomplished something in sports are like, this is kids, it's no big deal. Well, that's kind of Isaac and Esau. He admired him, but actually Jacob was a lot more like him. Jacob was a guy who at best was metrosexual, but it says that he hung out in the kitchen with his mom all the time. And he liked to cook. He always watched, you know, HGTV. And so, you know, these two different people, well, he had to hang out with his mom because his dad wasn't interested in him because he didn't have the physical characteristics of his older brother. And so growing up with that kind of tension in your life was just, it formed Jacob to a great degree. So they grow up. He's more like his dad, but his dad really likes his brother better. He's hanging out with his mom all the time. Now, he was cooking one day, and his brother comes in off the field, and he's like, oh, man, I'm so starved. I'm exhausted. And he goes, give me some of that red stew you're making. And Jacob goes, what will you pay me for it? And he goes, oh, just name it. He goes, okay, give me your birthright. Give me the right to your inheritance, and you can have my third. And Esau, not the smartest guy. Most big athletic guys aren't. And he goes, what good is my inheritance going to do for me if I die of starvation? So he goes, okay, fine. Now, it's totally a straight-up fair deal. He didn't have to do it. A lot of times we look at Jacob and go, oh, he tricked his brother into giving him, you know, the inheritance. No, he didn't. He made a fair deal and got it. And his brother really didn't care about it. And so, you know, then the story goes on. And later, his mom hears Isaac saying to Esau, it's time for me to give you your blessing. So go out there and kill an animal and barbecue it. Well, it's all nice and crispy, medium well. Bring it in here, and then I'm going to bless you. Now, in their culture, a blessing was a huge deal. What a blessing was is when you would take your child when they were grown and you would tell them that you're proud of them and you would lay hands on them and you would make predictions about their future, say, you are going to amount to something really great, something really special. And here's what I see happening in your life. It was a way to tell your son or daughter who they were. And so that was a big deal to them. Well, Rebecca heard it and she's like, I know that Esau is just going to be made in charge of everything. And so she pulls Jacob aside and she goes, here's the deal. I'm going to make your father's favorite meal and you're going to go in there pretending to be Esau and your dad will bless you instead of Esau. Now, who could blame Jacob for obeying his mom? His mom was the one who favored him. And so, I mean, he objected. He's like, are you kidding me? He's not going to, you know, I know he's blind, but he's not going to think I'm Esau. I don't, you know, he's going to get one whiff of my cologne. He's going to feel one piece of my silky smooth skin, and he's going to know it's not Esau. And she goes, you know, don't worry. She goes, we'll just rub dead animals on you, and you'll smell like Esau. And then we'll get an animal skin and put it on your neck, and when he goes to put his hand out, just let him feel that skin, and he'll think you're Esau. And he's like, are you kidding me? He's going to know the difference. And she's going, I've been married to him all these years. Trust me, he's stupid. He'll never see through this. And he's like, okay. So he comes in. His dad goes, hey, who's there? He goes, it's Esau. And he's going, I don't know, man. Come a little closer. Yep, you sure smell like Esau, but I better feel your skin. So he feels this fur coat and he goes, yep, that's hairy. That's what the name Esau means. But he goes, it's weird because you smell and feel like Esau, but you've got that squeaky, annoying voice of Jacob. And Jacob, oh, I got a little something in my throat, you know. So he goes, okay. And he blesses him. And he pronounces that he will be the one who his brothers serve. And that he will have a, there'll be a great plan for him, that the spiritual heritage that'll it'll move forward through him, that promise that God had made. Well, Esau wasn't too crazy about it when he heard about it. Because he comes in and he goes, okay, Dad, I got your meal. He goes, well, I'm kind of full from the last meal you just gave me. And he goes, that wasn't me. And he goes, oh, man. Nothing I can do. A blessing's a blessing. Esau's going, well, don't you have a blessing for me? He goes, yes, I bless you. You will serve your brother all your days. He's like, oh, bro. He's so mad. And so also Isaac's getting pretty old and sick. And so Rebecca tells Jacob, you better get out of town for a few days. Let's let him cool off. I'll fatten him up and everything. It'll probably be fine. So he leaves and he goes to his mom's brother's house, a guy named Laban, his uncle. And he goes there thinking for a few days, but apparently word keeps coming back that maybe you want to stay longer. As soon as he's at Laban's house, he falls in love with one of Laban's daughters, Rachel, who is his cousin, his first cousin. And he's like, man, she's hot. And so Laban says, well, I think you're working for me now, so how much do you want me to pay you? And he goes, let me marry Rachel. That's pay enough. And Laban goes, okay, if you work for me for 7 years, then I will give you Rachel. So he's like, okay. So he worked for 7 years, and he loved this girl so much that it was like, it seemed like a day, those 7 years. And finally the day comes, he's going to marry Rachel, and they have this big party and the reception. He probably drinks a lot. That's what they would do. And then his honeymoon suite, they go into this dark tent, and it's like what he had always dreamed of until morning when he woke up. And one of my professors at Biola said, the saddest verse in the Bible, he woke up in the morning and behold, Leah. Leah was Rachel's ugly sister. I mean, and that makes things complicated already. You know, it's like when there's two girls and like one of them has everything and the other really feels like a loser, it's worse than being twins where you're the little twin. But now he's stuck with her That wasn't who he worked for. So he goes to Laban and goes, I don't know if you noticed, but you accidentally gave me Leah instead of Rachel. And the honeymoon was okay, but the marriage is looking bad in daylight. And so Laban goes, oh, yeah, we have a tradition that if there's an older sister that we haven't been able to marry off, you have to marry her before you could marry off the younger girl. And he goes, Jacob says, I'll take them both then. How much for Rachel? He goes, just work another 7 years and you can have Rachel. So this poor guy worked 14 years to get two wives. Now, if you think that a nightmare is having two wives, imagine two wives who are sisters. I mean, and they're your cousins on top of it. It's like this story just gets more and more complicated. And then things get even worse. Man, this poor guy is such a victim. Now the women start having a baby contest. Who can have the most babies? Because they're competing to, you know, to become more, to mean more, for more significance. So they start, you know, right away, Leah has a couple kids, the ugly girl. Now, she's having those kids. And I don't know, I'm sorry if you're named Leah. It says that she had like dead eyes, whatever that means. But Rachel was beautiful of form and beauty, you know, so you get the picture. So it said that God let Leah get pregnant because he felt sorry for her, because Rachel was Jacob's favorite. So she cranks out a couple of kids, and Rachel's like really frustrated because she's not having kids. So then Rachel comes up with a great idea borrowed from Sarah, which brought about Ishmael, and she goes, I have a maid. Why don't you sleep with her? And when the baby's born, it'll be born in my lap, and that'll be my kid. And I mean, this is a little confusing, but he's a guy, and he's like, okay, if you insist. So then Leah's like getting it, tripping up, because then the maid had a baby, and it's like Rachel's kind of happy. Now Leah goes, I got a maid too. He's like, whatever, this is a weird marriage, but okay. And so ultimately it's going back and forth, and among four women, he cranks out 11 and ultimately 12 children. Man, oh man, can you imagine? And some of the, as you read the story, I'm not exaggerating this at all. As you read the story, there was one point where one of Leah's sons, Reuben, had found a mandrake plant. And people who are superstitious, today Wiccans still use mandrake plants. They believe they're good luck and they think they'll help with fertility. So she has this mandrake plant and her sister Rachel goes, let me have that mandrake. Maybe it'll help me. And Leah's going, well, what are you willing to pay for it? She said, well, you know, this week is my week with Jacob, so you can have him this week instead. So she's like, okay. So she has her mandrake, and Leah goes to Jacob and goes, hey, come on home. And he goes, well, it's my week with Rachel. And she goes, no, I bought you. And he goes, okay. And it's so weird. In the meantime, he's having this dispute with their dad, Laban, over cattle because he had worked 14 years for free. And now Laban goes, you need to be paid now. So how shall I pay you? And he goes, well, tell you what, why don't you give me every calf that's born that's spotted? I'll just take those. Laban's like, no problem. But then Jacob, like, gets these sticks, gets a little sign with spots all over it, and he puts it in front of the really strong cattle while they're breeding, and then a bunch of strong calves are born that are spotted. Now, this is weird. Later on, it just says God just blessed them, and that's why it worked. But then Laban goes, well, how about you can have the striped ones? So then he makes his sign with the stripes, and sure enough, all these striped cattle. So he's doing really well. But he realizes Laban's going to be mad at me. He's going to turn on me. And so he leaves, takes his family, takes his cattle. And the only place he can think of to go back to is home. But he's going, man, then I got to face Esau. Laban finally ends up blessing him and telling him to go. But, you know, he comes to this point and they're ready to go across the Jordan and to go to the land where his brother was living. And he goes, boy. So he takes a group of cattle with a bunch of money and a bunch of servants and everything. And he goes, go across. And when you see Esau, and he goes, hey, what's this? Say, this is a present from your brother Jacob. Then he sends a whole other crew behind them. This is a present from your brother Jacob. He's thinking, I'm going to butter him up enough. See, he's still trying to kind of weasel his way in and do the best he can. And you have to sort of admire that in a way. But in the end, finally, it's just his family. And here in chapter 32, he sends his family on ahead of him. And he's going to spend the night alone. And that's our introduction. Now look at chapter 32, verse 22. And he, that is Jacob, arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, his girlfriends, and his 11 sons. He crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Some guy's wrestling with him all night long. Now, later in the story, we find out the man is actually God, which is really interesting. How can you be God and man? There's only one guy I know that can do that, and that was Jesus Christ. And so I believe this is a Christophany, an appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament. So they're fighting, and you think this wimpy little cook is not going to have a chance against God. But check it out. When he saw, that is, this being, when Jesus saw that he could not prevail against Jacob. Think about that. God couldn't beat him. That's fascinating. So he touched the socket of his hip. And the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. He still didn't give up. And finally God says, let me go. It's morning. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. He's locked him on with a death grip. And so he said to him, what is your name? And he said, they call me Weasel. And he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. The name Israel means a battling with God or a prince of God. For you have struggled with God. That's how we know this man was God. And with men. And you have prevailed. You won. And then Jacob asked him, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face. That means face to face with God. And my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. He limped for the rest of his life from this experience.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Here's what's ahead of us next time on The Balanced Word.
What God wants and needs from us is a relationship. And you can't have a relationship with someone if it isn't okay for you to get mad at them, if it isn't okay for you to have differences, to clash. There are some people who have relationships that are held together by one or the other or both just going, I better not say what I feel. That's not the kind of relationship God wants. He wants us to be honest. And the truth is, his ways are so much higher than ours, more than the heavens are higher than the earth. And if you don't get mad with God sometime, you either aren't noticing what's going on, or you're probably just not that close to him. But this story will let us know forever. You can be blessed and fight with God.
We'll have that for you and more tomorrow on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Roth, a daily presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hands and